Hey, Jeff here, host of Tell the Band to Go Home on UMFM every Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. During this weird period in history, this weird self-isolation period, I decided to kind of take on a dream that I've had for a long time, just to host like a daily radio show. And I've been doing it every afternoon in my basement, my pajamas, every day at 3:30. Well, I say every day, I've done it twice. But hope to do it every day. The goal, largely, I want to get some special guests. I want to talk to people, stay connected with people. And that's exactly what happened today. I said, hey, who wants to talk today? And quickly got a message from my old pal, Leroy Stagger. Leroy Stagger, I've known for many, many years. And he's been not only one of my favorite musicians, one of the guys we play most on the show, but a good friend as well. So it was nice to connect with him today. And we had this little chat. And I hope you enjoy it. And I hope you... maybe tune in to one of these shut-in sessions daily, 3:30 p.m. Central Time at tellabandtogohome.com. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here. Are you there?
Miracle of modern technology. How are you, man?
Oh, hanging in there. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing all right. You know, it's a crazy time. I don't know if you've heard, but things are a little hairy out there.
I've been shut in for weeks here, so I don't know what's happening in the modern world.
Well, how's the family holding out, though?
Oh, good. Yeah, we're great.
Yeah, the kids aren't getting a little stir-crazy or anything?
Well, they're stir-crazy, but they're always stir-crazy.
Yeah, so I suppose.
You know, they're just beating each other up, fighting and watching TV. But we're having a good time. We're hanging in there.
You're a guy like me. You're prone to the darkness, the anxiety sometimes. Isn't there some overwhelming, like, what the fuck are we gonna do kind of ness going on in your head? Because I know that's a problem for me.
No, I've been the last couple of years I've kind of done a ton of work on that stuff with meditation and therapy and all that, and it seems to have subsided pretty good now. I think it's like the Buddhism thing really kind of helped.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like something about Buddhism really clicked with me. And it was something about just like giving up control. And kind of when I faced the reality, the truth of it all of life is like, you know, we have very little control over anything. So why bother grasping, continuing to grasp when it's kind of a futile exercise. So when I kind of came to the conclusion that we're all going to die someday, I kind of...
We didn't expect it to be this soon, though.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that's the thing. It's just like, it's kind of like, yeah, well, I mean, anything can happen, so... The things I worry, is it that Tom Petty line that's like, most things I worry about never happen anyway? It's Tom Petty, isn't it?
Maybe.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's on, I think it's like Crawling Back to You.
Yeah.
I think there's a line that's, most things I worry about never happen anyway.
Yeah, I suppose like, so.
That line, it always stuck with me. And it's not, I haven't had, I mean, there's like moments of panic for sure. But they're like very brief, and it's kind of like, how are we gonna find a way to just get through the next, you know? Because financially, it's kind of like it's a bit of a, you know. Me and my manager joked about this the other day. She said 20 years in the music business has been preparing us for this moment forever.
I suppose. Now you've
and I had to laugh.
Yeah, you kind of have been taking some steps to not tour quite as much. So, I mean, did you have stuff planned for this period? Is this affecting you as much as maybe it would have a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it is. Like my tour with Frazee Ford in May is I don't know if it's officially been canceled, but it's canceled, and that's a significant amount of income. And profile building.
Where was that?
That was in Europe, in Scandinavia, and Holland. And, But, you know, it just is the way it is. I'm actually more bummed because I was signed up to do my first marathon on May 17th in Copenhagen. That officially was canceled this morning. So,
no way.
But, you know, the reality is, it's like we're all doing this for the better good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, so it's hard to be selfish
when
we're thinking about, you know, we haven't had, maybe our chickens are finally kind of coming home to a roost in North America. We've had it pretty good for the last few decades, for the most part. You know, we haven't had to, well, the rest of the world has to, you know, deal with a lot of austerity and terrorism and food scarcity and global warming. We, you know, maybe it's kind of time for us to see how tricky it can be sometimes, you know, when you're not allowed to leave your home.
Yeah, it's been quite a shock. I mean, yeah, like you're saying, a lot of the world has been dealing with this stuff for so long, but here in North America, we come from this ridiculous place of privilege where, you know, we just expect that things are going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's quite a lesson to suddenly go, maybe in the short term it's not.
Yeah, I've had this like weird underlying feeling like something like this is going to happen in the last couple of years. Every time I got on a plane to go away from home, I always kind of had a bit of an unsettling feeling of like, oh, maybe is this the time where I have to like work really hard to get back to my family?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably some people that are still stranded on cruise ships and what have you, but for the most part, I think, you know, we've gotten, the government has done pretty decent at getting everybody back to Canada at the very least. But it is like a weird, you know, dystopian,
it's crazy.
Cormac McCarthy-esque thing where your mind can go. That's for sure.
You know, I just found this show on Amazon Prime yesterday. Apparently, it's an old show. It was from years ago, but and there's a movie too, which I've never seen. But 12 Monkeys, I've ever seen.
Oh
this.
Yeah, for Brad Pitt's in that movie.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not watching. There was a TV series afterwards that I just stumbled on yesterday, and it's unbelievable because it talks about how this virus basically wipes out the world's population in the year 2015. I mean, this was made a few years before that.
That's nice.
But it's just kind of eerie and weird, to kind of think, is that what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, it's like we've got a still a relatively mild virus. It's just very,
it's not the virus that scares me, though.
It's
the lunatics, and there's so many of them next door to us. The biggest lunatic of all is running the place.
Tiger King. I watched Tiger King. Watching that.
Yeah, we
last
just
night.
Started that. Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know. Yeah. One day at a time.
Yeah, I suppose that's all we can do, right?
It's true. I mean, there's nothing to worry about in the moment. You know, everything's good. And the problem is, as human beings, we like to live in the future and hang on to the past instead of just being in the moment.
Yeah.
The moment is right now. Me and you are talking on Sky phones that are beaming our signal back and forth thousands of miles away or a thousand, whatever, how far we are from each other. But
yeah, it's nice. We've got a bunch of folks listening online from all over the place. It feels, you know, it feels kind of like we're connected again instead of
that's the thing for me. It's like it really has highlighted just how connected we are
and, yeah, how easy it is these days, right?
For the good, for better or worse, you know. I think the beauty of this is if you are having to self-isolate, you know, there's a lot of people that don't have that option, that have to go and work on the front lines of keeping us fed and healthy and all that.
Yeah.
I have so much respect for those people. And then this province,
it's unbelievable.
You know, right before this all broke, we had a provincial government that was, you know, trying to cut a lot of these services off at the kneecaps. And I think if now it's just, I really hope that people wake up to just how important that teachers and doctors and nurses, you know, just to name a few, are, especially teachers. You know, we both have young kids at home right now, obviously, And I am, you know, me and my wife are not cut out to you know, be teachers. And these people deserve a lot more money than what they get paid, and they deserve a lot more credit than what they get to, because they're truly, truly heroes.
Well, what scares me is, like, here at least, we as teachers, we're still working and we're still kind of planning stuff and supposed to be supporting kids. In Alberta, they basically said the year's over, so you're off on your own, right? Like, your teachers
aren't... What, are you guys still teaching?
We're not teaching, but we're preparing online materials and kind of supporting people that way, reaching out to people and stuff like that.
I think that's kind of what they're doing here, and I'm thinking that they're talking about moving it to an online curriculum. But, you know, even that, it's like, that's not what, you know, that's not what you signed up for, but that's, you know, you obviously will do it. But I know teachers, I have a lot of teacher friends here that will go into work, and from the top down, it'll be like, this is what we're doing today. And by the end of the day, after they've done all that work, it comes back as like, okay, no, we can't do that. We have to scrap that. So all that work that you've done is completely moot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, these teachers want to get hold of the parents and kind of let that happen, or, you know, let them know that what's kind of happening, and they're not able to. And it's just kind of a bureaucratic nightmare. But the flip side is that we're at home with our kids, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a ton of work. So
yeah,
we
were kind of
respect for you guys.
We were kind of joking about a lot of parents are going to suddenly have more respect for teachers, perhaps, because they're going to find out how hard their kids are to teach.
Yeah, I hope so. I kind of knew it all along, but not to this degree. I mean, and also, like I was saying before, the blessing for me is, like, I feel for those of us that have to self-isolate, it's a kind of a gift in a lot of ways, because it's really forced me and my family to just slow down.
Yeah.
There's no schedule. There's no, you know, like, we get up at the same time every day, but we're not in a hurry to get people out the door or get to work. We can slow down and enjoy each other's company. And for me, who I'm always traveling,
yeah,
I don't have a lot of, you know, I haven't had a extended period of time with my kids or with my wife in ages, and it feels I feel really grateful for that aspect of it, to be honest with you. I feel really, really grateful, and it's really, really fun.
you and I are both in a position of privilege, though, where we do have some income coming in, and it's hard for me to kind of reconcile all the people who suddenly have nothing.
Yeah, well, thankfully in our country, and I think they're, you know, that's going to be rectified quickly. I mean, you know, me and my wife we both work, and she's got no income now, and she's self-employed like I am, so we don't have steady income, and
right.
I don't, I mean, I've got, you know, some savings and a bit of royalties coming in. But I don't know how long that's going to last for. But I think federally they just announced that we're going to have some sort of financial respite, which is great. But I mean, I don't know how long can that last too. Like,
yeah,
how much
exactly.
money does our government have?
Yeah.
So it's scary. But yeah, I mean, there's people that are way worse off than us. And when I say that, you know, I'm enjoying actually my time, I realize that that is definitely a privileged thing to say, because there's a lot of people that don't. And I mean, it also just kind of highlights the fact that this country is run off the backs of people that are working, you know, the working class, because they're still out there. Construction workers are still out there building, and and they're kind of not being told to stop.
Yeah,
and it really does highlight the fact that what's that all about, you know?
Yeah. You've been you haven't really done the online concerts or anything yet. Are you thinking about
no.
that?
I'm thinking about it. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of torn on it.
Yeah, people seem to be.
I just don't feel compelled to sing about it, to sing right now, to be honest. I've been working. I just finished a record, like right as this thing hit, I was in the studio and raced home to get home on the last day to get home with the family instead of, because I was supposed to go to the island for a week. And I had some downtime there. So I'd been working, but yeah, no, I haven't really felt compelled to sing, and I'm just not really into like glitchy, watching glitchy concerts with poor audio quality.
They're really bad, yeah.
Not really been my thing, but I also have a lot of respect for people that are doing it, you know, and if they feel compelled to sing for people, I think that's really important.
Well, I think a lot of them just have to, though, right? Like, what else are they going to do? Because,
like, what do you mean? Like, in financially or like artistically?
Well, financially.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's, you know, to be honest, that's another reason why I haven't. I also feel like, okay, I'm not supposed to be on tour right now. So I kind of wanted to leave some space for the people that are effectively, you know, are immediately losing out on income.
Right.
I just feel like I don't want to clog up the lines. That was kind of a big factor, you know, but I don't know. Yeah. And that's like, it highlights the other thing, that here we are in a business that has no safety net or very little backup. It's completely reliant on the community to, you know, for us to make a living. And I don't know, it's scary. And I'm sure you've probably picked up on the fact that I've been wrestling with this career choice for the last few years. Anyway, so when this rolls down, it just makes you go, you know, I don't know. I'm still no closer to making a decision.
Yeah. Well, I have such respect for all of you, and really, like, what you have done for me, you know, through your music and all the things you do has benefited me so much. And I would hate to think of you not doing it from a selfish standpoint, but I would completely understand in a second if you said, I've had enough.
I don't think that I personally would ever like stop completely. I love making records. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I love the catharticism of writing. Like, that's a big part of it. But I think the thing for me is, I don't know, I've really wrestled with this, and I thought about going back to school for maybe an education. But I don't know, every time I get to that point of pressing the trigger, it's like, I'm a creative person, and I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I like doing so many different things. So, I don't know. I don't know if that's the thing. And also, education just went up in this province again. So I was kind of like, well, I'm not going to spend tens of thousands of dollars to go to school. If that's keep going up and student loan interest went up, it's kind of like, that was a challenge. But I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I think it's time to start looking at a universal basic income, as well as EI, some sort of EI benefits for self-employed people, I think would be a good step after all this stuff, to just kind of reinforce artistic. I mean, yeah, our society would not thrive without artists.
Yeah.
The visual artists, musicians, you know, it's just, what a terrible, boring place that we'd live in if we didn't have creatives.
There's so many great lessons that I hope we learn from all this stuff, but the skeptic in me wants to say that it's probably just going to go back to the way it was.
Well, maybe it'll make a little bit of gain. You know what I mean?
I hope so. Yeah. There's so much that we can see differently and do differently and realize that we can do without and do differently for the better.
Even if we just take a couple lessons on a personal front, like each of us, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the system, I don't know if it will. I mean, maybe it will. Something's going to change, I think, because they're down now, caught with their pants down.
Yeah.
But if we just change things on a personal level and go like, okay, well, we can do with all the help, we can do without all the stuff in our lives.
Yeah.
And what really, really matters in our lives. lives. You know, it matters that we have clean, healthy, nutritious food to be able to feed our families and our kids. It's important that we have clean air, clean water. And all the other stuff is literally, it's literally just extraneous.
Do we start to now that we're facing some of these questions ourselves, do we start to care more about First Nations who don't have those things and places in the world that don't have those things? Do we start to understand that better, do you think? Or does the Western arrogance just say, well, so long as I'm okay,
I think,
but it doesn't
matter? Well, there was a bit of a waking up, I think, before this thing all went down in this country. I've tend to gravitate towards those teachings for a while now. You know, even since I was a kid, I was really intrigued by that lifestyle, but those cultures rather. And now so more than ever, it just is, it's so apparent to me that the planet and Mother Earth is the real, that's the real connector of it all. And I think the First Nations in this country have, I don't know what this is going to do for the visibility of what was happening beforehand, whether it's going to push it to the side or if it's going to get people to wake up. I think maybe it'll do a bit of both, but it's something that's been on my mind for years.
Yeah, let's hope so for sure. So you were saying you weren't that inspired to do art these days. Does that mean you're literally not hanging out in the studio and not doing any of that stuff? Or
I've been doing art and I've been writing, just haven't been compelled to sing. Most, I think, also to the fact that I was ill when I got home and everybody in the house was sick. So I just have, you know, and then just being in the studio and singing for a week straight, I was just kind of worn out.
Right.
But I don't know. It's just, there's a few different reasons, even just outside of all this pandemic stuff that is kind of driven that to me. My last record, I thought was really good, but I don't know. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. In terms of visibility, and that kind of bummed me out. So I just didn't really, I just kind of went, looked at that group of songs. I was like, oh, I could sing that one. That would be nice. Maybe people might find some comfort in that song. But at the end of the day, I was like, well, I'm not going to find anything in that song right now. So I think I just need to leave it be for a while.
So did Love Versus kind of lead you to believe that Strange Path would do better or would sell more units, or what's the deal? What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting because I definitely went for more of a commercial sound on Strange Path. And I really saw how fickle the business was, especially in this country. You know, we paid, you know, there was radio publicity in the States and in Canada, and we were told by some key stations that for sure this record was going to get played because we had sent songs out. They're like, this is amazing, this totally fits the format, and we're on board. And then when it came time to drop the single, City in Color dropped their single at the same time, and it completely negated anything that we could have gotten. There was only room.
Is it really that competitive? That.
Yeah, and that just made me go, like, bless City in Color in Dallas, and Matt just played on my new record, this record that I just made. But it just made me go, why? I have a better single. And I just kind of threw my arms up and went, I've been chasing this thing for almost two decades, And that was it for me. It was like, if this can be shut down this quick for this one thing after I've spent tens of thousands of dollars on this, mm-hmm. I don't know if I have the energy to do this anymore. So I wrote a record. So naturally, I wrote a record for myself, and it's very different. And it's really, really good. And I'm excited for that. Not that Strange Path was like, not that there was anything. I didn't sacrifice anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I wrote those songs from my heart, and they weren't like throwaway songs by any means, like not even close. But the production obviously was, it wasn't even slicker. It was just different.
Yeah.
So this is, I said, I don't want to play this game anymore.
Yeah. It's interesting. I know you're friends with Dennis Ellsworth, and he was kind of struggling with a lot of this stuff himself recently. Yeah. He just decided that, you know, maybe playing the game just isn't worth it. But he said, I still want to make music. I don't know if I want to rely on it as my career. I don't know if I want to care about the being a part of the industry.
Yeah, because the game is very different. There's multiple ways to kind of go about it. And it's like, there's the game, and then there's like just making a living. And then there's like hustling. And it's just, it's been nonstop hustle, and like, I don't know. I don't really play the game, and I haven't really in a long time. Like, I don't show up at the, you know, the conferences very much, and glad hand with those people that I find I have nothing in common with. I kind of gave that up a few years ago, but you know, it's like you have to kind of be visible doing all these things still. And I don't know, I'm just gonna do what I want to do and what feels good to me from now on.
Yeah.
And probably not tour as much, just because I don't know, I love playing to people.
Yeah.
But you know, part of that is like adjusting. The game says you got to play the clubs. The game says you got to play the venues. And I've done those, and I've like, you know, sometimes they're good, and sometimes they're bad. And even when they're good, it's like the all of a sudden it's just people are taking your money left and right.
Yeah.
And you're left with nothing. You're left with the same amount of money as playing your friend's house concert down the street. And it's less headache and bed earlier, and you've sold more CDs at the house. And you're just kind of like, what is this? Why am I doing this? Is it for the visibility and the acclaim, or is it to like bring joy to people and make a living and be able to feed my family?
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just at an age now where it's like, I just care less about being cool, you know, like, or being quote unquote cool.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're happy. Like, you've accomplished a lot. If you, I'm sure that when you first started out, when you were 20 years old or whatever, you had bigger dreams. But at the same time, if you probably looked at, you know, the number of places that you've been and the number of records you put out and the number of, you know, people you've met and things that you've done, you would have to be somewhat proud about that and satisfied with
that.
Oh,
yeah.
I think our nature, we always want more, right? Like, we always want it to be easier or bigger or better, I guess. But
yeah, and I mean, there's really no better way to like evolve as a human being than in an industry of adversity in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? Because
it just keeps humbling you again and again.
Yeah, and that's okay, you know. But it's just it's not even that. It's like, I don't mind not being not living up to my expectations when I was younger. I just don't like having to deal with situations that have nothing to do with my values.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like, I don't want to work I don't want to work with people that I don't like their ethics or, and I mean, you know, I know that's like, again, that's a privileged position because most people have to go to work and deal with those kinds of things. But in my line of work, it's like there's a lot of substance abuse, and I find myself in positions, a negative positions that are, they're rare.
Yeah.
But there's usually one a tour where you're kind of scratching your head and going like, wow, that's just not worth my mental health to like have to,
yeah,
to be in that position, whether or not, you know, like, for instance, I won't mention any names of venues, but on the last tour, we played a packed venue with a really high ticket price and walked out of there with less money than the sound person. And stuff like that, and you kind of go, what's that all about? And there's just like the ethical stuff behind that. It makes me question, like, oh, is this, you know, is this a business that I want to be involved in? And I don't know.
That's I guess. Friends of ours played here in Winnipeg, and they played, you know, the music venue to play in Winnipeg, and had a crowd out and sold tickets, and then they left with like nothing. Two guys left with $100, I think, and the sound guy in the opening act got more.
Wow.
And this is like the place to play in Winnipeg, and it's like, how does that happen?
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And like, when you've been doing it for 2 decades and trying to raise kids on it, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, they work hard to try to get to the point where they can play that venue, but then they go, well, we could have made 5 times as much playing your living room for, you know.
Do you remember like the Ducks? I think there was like, it was like the Ducks kind of thing, was like where the bigger they got, the more expensive it became and the less money they made.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was kind of like at some point they were kind of like, well, what's the point of this? It's, you know, and it's not great for your mental health. You hang your hat on this identity of, you know, being this person, like, oh, I'm Leroy Stagg, or I have to be this person. But as you grow up, it's like, oh, I'm actually Lee Stark. I'm father of Guthrie and Ewan and husband to Kobe. And these are things that I don't necessarily want to always be identified and defined as this thing that I do for a job.
Either. Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
I know, it's a weird thing to, like, think of, but it's true. It's like you just get to a point in your life and you just go, people have these expectations of you and who you are and how you act, and it's just kind of like, one day I woke up and I was like, I don't know if I really like that so much.
I don't know if I'd I always wondered about the artist, because there's so much pressure on you to be nice and to be positive and to put on a good show, and it's like I have bad days where I go and I'm kind of grumpy to kids, and you know, it's I don't feel good about it, but it's okay. And whereas if you do a show and you're grumpy, you probably read about it on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have that problem anymore. I used to, you know, there's certainly, God, if the internet, was as prominent, Facebook was as prominent when I first started out, I'd have real problems.
I suppose.
But, you know, I surround myself now with really good people. I surround myself with really good people that kind of make up for my shortcomings, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, like Ryland, my tour manager, is the happiest, go luckiest person around.
Oh, so what a great human being. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where you found him, but don't let him go.
When we roll into a venue, he's the first person that goes in.
Yeah.
Because he's the first person that people are going to see, and that's the impression that they're going to get. Because, I am usually not even so much grumpy, but I'm a little bit, it takes me a little bit slower to get fired up for the day when I've been sitting in the van for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What a life it is, you know, but again, you know, hopefully you're grateful for your part in it, and hopefully you don't feel necessarily like you have to do it if you don't want to.
Oh, no. I'm incredibly grateful for it all. You know, even the hard lessons. It's just, that's life. And just we're kind of learning, you know, from it. And the art of it is the thing that, like you, you know, that you love so much with the artists that you love. It's just the art keeps me going as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this album, when do you think we might hear it? Is there any way to predict anymore? Like, what's
there's no way to predict. God, I have no idea. I don't know. I probably won't sit on it too long, to be honest. I'll probably release it. I don't know. You know, I don't know if I have with True North. I know I've kind of worked through my two records option with them, so I'm not sure if they'll put out the next one.
Oh, you're not even sure.
Yeah, so if they put it out, then I guess it'd probably be a little while, but if we're just going to put it out ourselves, I don't know. I don't know. There's no real hard, fast rules in my mind anymore, so as soon as it's mixed and mastered, maybe it'll come out, and maybe I'll tour on it when we're able to again. I don't know when that's going to be, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm stoked on it. It's cool. It's we went for a real 60s and 70s production style, and it does sound definitely has that sound to it.
Yeah, that's cool. What do you recommend that we should be listening to these days? I know you play so much great stuff. You introduced me to so much great stuff on Dirty Windshields on Saturdays, but do you have any music tips
to listen to,
or any requests?
Kobe, what are you listening to right now? Is there any music that we can recommend to these guys? I don't know. I kind of tend to lean on the old stuff. I've been listening to a lot of Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings. I was listening to some John Sebastian this morning and John Harford. So I tend to delve back into the older stuff.
Yeah.
But you know who I really liked? What's her name? Karen Bennett. Incredible. Big Thief. You guys know those guys?
Big Thief?
Yeah.
I've heard the name, but I don't know if I've ever listened to them.
Really into that band. Lori McKenna is like always a big one for me.
Oh, she's so great.
Yeah, I think one of the best songwriters around my run. To be honest, and Mary Gaucher is always like a really, like a warm blanket.
Yeah, for sure.
When we're going through this kind of stuff. What about you? What are you listening to?
I don't know. I'm still, I found Katy Pruitt a little while ago. I'm really enjoying that record. I hate it when I ask this question, because then I have to answer it and I can't even, I can't even remember all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like the new music, I listen to a lot of the singles that come out, and then I just tend to like albums. I listen to the older stuff again.
Yeah.
Joe
Nolan's got a new album that's absolutely phenomenal.
Everything I've heard off that is really good.
God, he's just,
I listened to George Harrison's Living in a Material World the other day, and that record is beautiful.
Yeah.
So that's a really good one.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're cutting out big time, and I think my battery's going to die here in a minute anyway.
Okay,
so
buddy.
That was a lot of fun. I really appreciated that, and I hope
we
do it again soon. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So there we go. That's Leroy Stagger for you there. Yeah, so that's that. So that's Leroy Stagger. Chatted with him today. Today is March, I don't even know anymore, 25th. Here, the year 2020, the year of self-isolation. And who knows who we'll talk to tomorrow. Tune in again. Shut-in sessions daily, 3:30 p.m. Tell the band to go home.com. Thanks, everybody.